Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And you're listening to Maltin on Movies. And our guest today is a man who isn't exactly a household name.
In my household, I am.
I was kidding.
In your household, I would hope so. Because you are a remarkable guy, and your name, for everybody's information, is Richard Kraft. Welcome, Richard.
Hello.
Richard, by profession, is a manager of top film score composers. I'm talking about Danny Elfman and John Powell.
Who?
And rattle off some other names.
I wouldn't want to be overly selective, but
right. It
tends to be my first client's Danny Elfman.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have a number of now dead clients, but my second client was Jerry Goldsmith. I did not kill these people, by the way.
No, so no one would accuse you.
Yeah. So in the decomposing category,
mm-hmm.
it's Jerry Goldsmith, Henry Mancini, Elmer Bernstein, Basil Polidoris, Maurice Jarre, John Barry. So people I idolized, I represented.
Mm-hmm.
The old guard, and then my first client was Danny Elfman when he was a young puppy, and now I do film and Broadway, so I have Alan Menken and mm-hmm. Mark Shaiman, and it's just a bunch of people that write really good
and
music.
Hang on, and two guys who are doing pretty well right now.
Oh, yeah, Pasek and Paul, who they won the Oscar this year for the lyrics for La La Land, and they won the Tony for Dear Evan Hansen. They have a original movie musical about Houdini starring Hugh Jackman called Greatest Showman coming out at the end of the year.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they're writing the lyrics for the new songs in the Aladdin movie with Alan Menken. And they're about 8 years old. So it's really amazing.
Well, please, it's like now, when you see Damien Chazelle. I remember the first time that we met him, or when Whiplash was going on, I said, how old are you?
Yeah.
And I think he was 28 or something like that. And I went, that's just, no, you're a baby.
Yeah, we have to check the child labor laws.
He looks about 15.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, to say that Richard is a manager is accurate, but doesn't begin to tell the story, does it?
No, I describe you as a showman, as P.T. Barnum, I want to know your story. I want to know how it all began, but what I know of you even now, if I needed management, I would run to you because you're so passionate and you get so excited, and that is exactly what people want.
Well, I wouldn't say as a manager, I would say I'm a geek. Who has managed to use his geekness for good as opposed to evil. And I've done it for fun and profit because right. I actually have no background in anything. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to college. I don't have a single skill set. I grew up in Bakersfield, so I certainly didn't know anybody who wasn't a cow or, it's like there's just no background of any value except for extreme nerd. Loved mm-hmm. movies from the very first movie I ever saw was Mary Poppins.
Mm-hmm.
And it melted my brain, and I somehow reformed it and saw it over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point on, my father was a school teacher. So since I showed interest in movies, he would drive my brother and I from Bakersfield to Los Angeles to see old movies at the County Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And on a fateful day, when I was about 7 years old, we went and saw the Errol Flynn Adventures of Robin Hood. And right before it started, my dad said, oh, listen to the music. And I go, what, they're going to sing? He goes, oh, no, there's music in the background. This guy, Eric Wolfgang Korngold, wrote it, and it's really good. So I'm sitting there, and I'm listening, and there's this great symphonic music, and there's guys... Exactly.
Yeah. Now this is what I wish this was also videotaped.
Yes.
You two doing that in unison.
So imagine you're about 6, 7 years old, and you hear yum, bum, 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 bum. You have no option other than being obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
And so my dad was a book collector, and he went every weekend or about six... thrift stores in Bakersfield, and he would do the rounds looking for books. And my brother and I would tag along, and we would start buying things that said soundtrack on them. And they were a nickel, so what my dad could spring for him. And I had no idea what the movies were. I mean, I had started collecting. By the time I was out of high school, I had thousands of soundtracks, of which I knew what the movies were of very few of them, but I noticed patterns. The ones that said music by Jerry Goldsmith sounded better than the ones that didn't say that. And so I started developing taste.
And these were on that old-fashioned format. What do we call it again? Records.
Yes, records.
Records.
Even calling them albums sounds so quaint. And do you know why they're called albums?
Huh? No, I don't. Because of the 78 albums?
Yes, that looked like photo albums. They had the same binding and the sleeves.
All right, if you haven't seen these, if you're not familiar with them, the original recordings of the first half of the 20th century were called 78 RPM records. That was the speed they ran at. And somebody in the 40s came up with the idea of doing sort of a folio of 78s with like a book cover. And a spine. And they were called albums.
Yes. And I still call them albums, and you youngsters have no idea what I'm talking about.
I'm 100. Don't even with me.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. And so then we took our nerdness a step further and started calling up the composers because everyone was listed in the phone book and directory information.
See.
So I would, I mean, I think I was 9 and my brother would have been like 12. And we call up directory information and go, Elmer Bernstein, please. And they give us his phone number. We call up Elmer Bernstein and go, hi, we're really big fans of your work. And he was like, oh, you want to come visit me? Now, here's the part that at the time sounds quaint. At the time was quaint and now sounds like I would never do this with my child. My parents would drop me off at these houses of famous people and say, see ya, and leave us there for 3 hours with total strangers. Fortunately, there were people like Elmer Bernstein who turned out to be magnificent, and he did the Magnificent Seven, and he was a Magnificent One. He was great. And he showed more interest in, hey, what are you kids doing, and why do you care about this? And so I just was a uber nerd who loved film music. The parallel thing I loved was Broadway cast albums of shows I had never seen. And in those days, they had very limited liner notes. So I had no idea what the shows were about. So I made up my own plots. My version of Showboat is substantially better than the actual one.
Move over, Edna Ferber.
Right.
But what's crazy is a song like Old Man River. Mm-hmm. I assumed the show was about that guy. And he's been whipped down and beaten. But no matter what happens, Old Man River keeps rolling along. Mm-hmm. No. We meet him in the scene. There's two girls talking. He said, they're like saying some flirty little thing. And he goes, oh, love's like Old Man River. Sings a song and he's gone. It's sad. But so.
Can I interrupt for one
please,
thing?
Please, I insist.
This is allowing me to vent a pet peeve.
Oh, I love it.
Just a little sidebar.
Yeah.
You just described something that is called an original cast album. That is what a Broadway record or download today.
Yes. Oh, I like you use the kids' terms.
That's what it would be.
The original.
It is not a soundtrack.
Oh, ouch. Ooh. Look, do you want us to go get some tiki torches and go protest? Because I am so furious about this issue. It makes no sense.
It makes no sense, but I hear it all the time.
Oh my God.
People saying, oh, yeah, I just listened to the soundtrack of Hamilton.
Yes.
No, you didn't.
They haven't made the movie yet. When they make the movie of Hamilton, then you will have the soundtrack.
Right. Oh. You are listening to the original cast album.
But I'm going to start using it in the reverse. I'm going to go, oh, did you get the original cast album of Wonder Woman?
I mean, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah,
I think that's a good idea.
You know, but I'm sure as we explore, we will bump into similar things that annoy the hell out of us. Yeah.
It was a cue I had to take.
Yeah.
Sorry for interrupting the flow of the conversation.
It is the flow.
You should see his face when someone says it, because I look at him and there's fire.
It's seething.
He tries to be polite, and you can just see him wanting to punch him right
in
the mouth.
Okay, well, the question that drives me insane, whenever I'm with one of my film music clients, and I say, oh, he writes music for movies, and they think to ask a question. The question is almost always, so do you see the film first?
Yes, the answer is sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
No, I psychically derive what the sequences will be, how long they're going to run.
Well, no, what the, I thought what it was is that he just writes some music,
and, they
and then they make a movie.
Although, as you
and
know,
they shove them together.
That has happened.
As you know, increasingly, yeah. that is happening.
Yes. And sometimes, first of all, there's two versions of it. Like, allegedly, Sergio Leone had Ennio Morricone write the gun battle music in, mm-hmm. like, Good, Bad, and Ugly, and then choreographed the film as if it was a musical number.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Then there's people like David Fincher, who had Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross write Beds of Music, and then
sure.
he cut it to picture.
Right. And Wes Anderson, who yes. who very, very specifically figures out what source music he wants to use and plays it on the set.
Yeah.
Yep.
As the actors are about to do the scene.
Well, and everybody, I mean, at this point, you're reading it constantly. James Gunn with the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they put people, on
well,
music
the thing
and...
that's interesting, filmmakers now have a lot, everybody's, and I don't mean this negatively. If you're a filmmaker, you also love music, you also love this. People are multifaceted, and my composers now are increasingly making film projects on their own, writing scripts, and people are feeling less boxed into this mm-hmm. is your one job.
Mm-hmm.
Segwaying back with no segue, so I ended up, you're going to like this, I come to L.A. with on my 21st birthday. I had my birthday party in Bakersfield at Chuck E. Cheese. So I said farewell to my mechanical band and headed off, and as I'm driving to Los Angeles, I hear on the radio John Belushi has died. And I took this as a positive omen that there was an opening. Like, okay, there's a finite number of people in show business, and I get Belushi's slot. So I get here, and I get a ticket passing out free movie tickets on the street corner for a research company,
mm-hmm.
movie research. And you've been, oh, no one would go up to you and
no,
offer you a free
I've been,
movie ticket.
No, they come
a
couple
up.
Times.
Oh, yeah?
They come up, yep.
And I was the, I'd get 50 cents for every ticket I passed out that mm-hmm. was redeemed and used.
Yeah.
I was so good at it.
Of course you were.
My secret is in Westwood, there was a Swenson's ice cream that had a monitor in the window.
I miss
that
Swenson's.
I do too.
Oh.
Oh.
Now you're bringing me down.
I know, it's a downer. Okay. But right. Here, how can I pick you back up?
Keep the story going.
Okay. The monitor in the window was showing trailers for upcoming movies.
Uh-huh.
So I'd stand next to it, and people would assume there was a correlation between me. And if you're the kind of person who's going to watch trailers, you're going to take a free movie ticket.
Right.
But my favorite part of the job is I also did phone calls to people in the Midwest for research questions about movies. And so I'd literally be given the yellow pages or the white pages of someplace in Kansas, and I'd call them up. I came up with a fake persona so I would not take rejection personally. And I go, "Hi, this is Richard Berry from Hollywood, California. Would you like to answer some questions about the movies?" They always say yes. And then I'd go, "Would you like to see a motion picture called Octopussy?" And I'd get hung up on. Then I'd go, "Would you like to see a James Bond movie called Octopussy?" And they were always like, "Oh, that's the funniest title. That's great." So they learned you never separate the title from the Bond.
Okay.
Right.
And the weirdest job I ever had was I had a plot breakdown of the movie Buckaroo Banzai, and I would call people up and say, "They're making a movie called Buckaroo Banzai. Let me read you the plot and tell me which parts you like the best." Of all the movies, it's like, it was insane. I also call people
that
up.
Is, of course, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai in the Eighth Dimension.
Yes.
God, Richard.
I bet you know.
And by the way, the Yoda character is played by Joel Grey.
Oh, my
God. Did you include that in the
No,
in the
that
pitch?
Would have
Why
made
Why do you remember this? Is this what you forget to put on a belt in the morning?
Yes.
Your brain is full of.
Yes, yes, exactly. Here's the exact comparison.
There.
As John Belushi's departure opened a slot for Richard, my useless knowledge like that
yeah.
opens a slot for something else to fall out.
Yes. So your
like
belt
putting on
drops.
The belt.
Like a belt.
Right.
Things but, like
but
that.
I bet you probably know the second part of every movie title after the
No, comment. I don't. I'm not good at that.
I do you know the titles of any of the Land Before Time direct-to-video sequels? I spent an entire lunch with somebody knowing these titles.
We probably know them is what's scary.
Anyway, so you were very successful in your solicitations.
Yeah, so I solicited well.
Company.
And that led to a recommendation at a job at a real film studio. They needed someone to operate the Xerox machine at Canon Films. Menachem Golem, Yoram Globus, the people who brought us Electric Boogaloo, the people who brought us many movies with Chuck Norris and Charles Bronson. And I was hired to operate the Xerox machine in the publicity department. I was reading the publicity I was Xeroxing, and it was clearly not written by anyone who English was their first language. So I volunteered to write their press material in the evenings. And I decided, well, the press material should actually include quotes from the filmmakers. So I wandered down as this guy was editing, and you don't even know who it is, the movie Sahara with Brooke Shields. Mm. It was like an old, it's not Victor McLaughlin, he'd be dead, right?
Yeah.
But it was a...
His son, Andrew?
It may have been. Here, we're going to pretend like I'm not looking on IMDb. But anyway, he was editing Sahara, and the music was horrible he was using for the temporary music. And I go, why are you using such bad music? And he pointed to a record shelf, 7 records. He goes, these are my choices. And I go, I have thousands of soundtracks at home. Why don't I bring in some that would be appropriate? I bring in a stack the next day. He said, I don't have time to listen to this. Do you know how to operate a flatbed editing machine? I go, of course. I'm glad he signaled towards it because I did not know which piece of equipment. And so I ended up doing the temporary music for Sahara. Then when the composer of the movie, Ennio Morricone, came to town, I picked him up in my Ford Pinto and drove him to the Holiday Inn in Hollywood. And then I spotted the movie with him, where we went through the film, and I showed him the 54 spots in the movie where there was going to be music, and through his translator, described what I wanted. About a month later, one reel of tape shows up with 19 pieces of music with no label of where any of it goes in the movie. It was just, here's a pile of Morricone music, put it in the film. And that, because I did that, they made me the head of their music department.
Wow.
And I could start hiring composers. And one of the first ones was Elmer Bernstein. Because he was nice to me when I was 9. There's no reason not to employ him. And I got to start working with people I idolized on some of the shittiest movies ever made. And so...
Were you involved with the Apple, perchance?
Oh, the Apple predated me. It was a heartbreak. It was like... do you know what the Apple is?
I don't.
It's a post-apocalyptic rock and roll musical directed by Menachem Golan.
Right.
And it is... if Tommy, the movie Tommy, was the worst movie ever made, it would be The Apple. It was inspired by Tommy, but it was bad stuff. But it predated me, and the soundtrack album was one of the 7 on the shelves. So, this lasted for a while, so I got to work on movies and learn everything, and then got invited by Elmer Bernstein. All roads lead to Elmer. He goes, you know more about film music than my agent. Why don't you go work for him? So I get a job as a receptionist at this talent agency. And my first day on the job as a receptionist, I came in with a sheet of paper saying, here are the composers I think we should sign. I don't even know where the restroom is. And the first name on the list was Danny Elfman. And they go, who's he? I said, he did this low-budget movie called Forbidden Zone, directed by his brother, and he has a band, Oingo Boingo. And it sounds like film music. And they were like, that's not interesting. Independent of me, Danny got Pee-wee's Big Adventure. And then they go, isn't that guy you were talking about? Now you can go get him. So Danny became my first client. And then quickly was an agent. Then I left to run a record label called Verez Saraband Records, which puts out soundtrack albums and original cast albums. Two different things.
Two different things.
Don't ever confuse them.
No, don't do that.
the rule was I could put out any record I ever wanted as long as I did not lose money. Mm-hmm. So I put out literally a record a week at a company that had me, a guy in the shipping department, and the owner of the company who did not own a record player. So that was the entire operation. And we were in.
And you will be so kind as to explain the name Varez Sarabande.
Okay, it predated me. Varez is Edgar Varez, who's a classical composer, mm-hmm. and Sarabande is a form of dance. Mm-hmm. And why it's named this, I do not know. And their logo looks like someone stepped on a bug. It's just a blotch. And if you find any of the records put out during my era, I also, not only did I assemble the music, I also designed the album covers, but this is pre-computer. Mm-hmm. So I just had wax. Instead of rubber cement, you would use melted wax to put stuff down. Mm-hmm. But I did not own a T-square. So if you find any of the records from my era, the type is always extremely crooked. During all of this, I'm still representing Danny Elfman. Danny does Batman, and then the world changes. I get a call from big talent agency, ICM. They want to start having me work there representing Danny and bringing other people over. Jerry Goldsmith's assistant calls me up and said, you've put out a bunch of Jerry Goldsmith records, but you're leaving to go be an agent? I don't understand. And I go, because I represent Danny Elfman. She goes, why is Danny's career better than Jerry Goldsmith's? And I'm 28 years old, and I go, well, it's obvious. It's because of me. And that led to Jerry Goldsmith becoming my second client. So now I have the young whippersnapper upstart and the old great veteran that everyone admires. And then I became a manager of lots of people.
Now, for those who don't know, and there are many who don't know, tell us the difference between an agent and a manager.
How much I charge. It is so, I mean, in other fields, a manager is the person with the long time overview of a person's career, and an agent specifically getting a specific job and making the deal.
Yeah.
I do everything. I do the laundry of my clients. I'm everything.
Okay. Again, yes. I
that was a lot of backstory. The origin story.
We're still on it.
Oh my God. Can we get to the fun part with the dancing girls?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Sure. Any minute now. And when did you meet your partner, Laura Engel?
I met Laura Engel because she managed Oingo Boingo.
Oh, okay.
And I saw her on the set of Back to School. Remember the mm-hmm. Rodney Dangerfield right. film? And Oingo Boingo's in the movie. And it was a lunch break. And I noticed this aggressive woman getting the band fed before the stars of the movie. Robert Downey Jr. and Rodney Dangerfield are waiting for their tacos, but the members of Oingo Boingo are getting fed. And it's like, I got to meet this woman.
My kind of lady, right?
Oh, yeah. And she also knew which tacos should have cheese and which should not. She knew every need of every band member.
Huh.
And so when Oingo Boingo stopped boinging, I said, would you be interested in being a film music agent? And she was considering record industry jobs, but fortunately decided to be my partner. And then to accelerate the story, I eventually got interested in musicals and Broadway. That was always seemed far away. But then Alan Menken's manager died. I had nothing to do with that, by
right.
the way. I've let it go on the record.
A lot of disclaimers.
Yeah, a lot of death.
Death is a reoccurring theme.
Right.
I'm the black widow of music. his manager died, and I had known Alan because I had a dog named Schmenken, named after Ashman and Menken. And every time they'd win an Oscar, Schmenken would send a paw print, thank you, congratulations to them.
Can we hear you calling your dog's name down the street, please?
Oh, Schmenken!
Just curious.
We had a cat named Gershwin.
All right.
Yeah, a very musical pet family.
Schmenken is possibly my new favorite thing.
Yeah, it
is. My firstborn might need to be Schmenken.
You know who coined it? Was Danny Elfman, because he legitimately did not remember their names, and he kept going, so did Schmenken win another Oscar? And so now I've become this musical theatery guy who's obsessed, mm-hmm. and now through great luck, musicals are not an embarrassing thing to say out loud.
Right.
We'll see how long that lasts. But because of La La Land and Beauty and the Beast and a number of ones in the wings, right now, for a brief window of time, when I say musical, people are somewhat interested.
Mm-hmm.
And that has led to my new weird career, which is I produce and direct musicals, movie celebrations at the Hollywood Bowl, where I take movies I love, like The Little Mermaid, and kind of celebrate them by breaking the film into lots of little segments, doing the score live, but then having people singing the songs live.
And like Jodie Benson.
Yes.
Like Ariel Jodie Benson.
Yeah, like Ariel Jodie Benson. And like non-Ursula Rebel Wilson. But what was great about Rebel Wilson? What was great is there were a lot of people interested in playing Ariel.
Sure.
And we had Jodie Benson, and we also, on other performances, had Sarah Bareilles, who was one of the typical girls who laid in the bathtub as a child, pretending she was the mermaid. Rebel Wilson pretended she was Ursula.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, she was so Ursula. She showed up at rehearsal. She was a wild card. Who knew? I mean, she was in the Pitch Perfect movies, but that's not the same
as
a live.
It's not singing.
Yes, and it could have been, you know, messed with. And
sure.
She showed up. She knew every note, and she decided to do it. If Lily von Stupp from Blazing Saddles was Ursula, it was magnificent. And then I've done Nightmare Before Christmas at the Hollywood Bowl with Danny and Catherine O'Hara and Paul Rubens. And then I did La La Land at the Hollywood Bowl, where the challenge was I didn't have any of the stars singing. So I had to come up with a lot of interesting bells and whistles to hide the fact that, yes, there is no Emma Stone on stage, and about to announce in the beginning of September my most insane one I'm ever having done, but I can't announce it yet. But you will, if there's ways to have artistic multiple orgasms, it's going to happen. Now, I was looking at Leonard when I said that.
Right. Now, the thing is, you've traveled with Danny all over the world doing these live performances.
Yes.
And that's, I mean.
What has happened that I never thought was going to happen? Hans Zimmer just did a major rock and roll tour. He did Coachella.
Yes.
The fact that film music is no longer just dusty old people like, oh, I love that background music, but it's so mainstream.
Yes.
And John Williams was sort of the starting point when those Boston Pops concerts at the time of Star Wars. And it was like, wait, that's the guy who wrote that music?
Mm-hmm.
And now it is in this moment where people are looking for live communal events, celebrating movies they love and the music they love is like, ooh, that's a real sweet spot.
Well, and hearing it live, this is the thing that what I know from growing up with music buffs, which both my parents are, and my mom especially with musical theater, the overture is one of the best parts. And when you go see a show live, that overture.
What's
it
your favorite overture?
Oh, man. Well, there are obvious answers. Carousel or Gypsy.
Yes, those are the.
You know,
those are
I mean.
So give me an. And Candide.
Yeah, sure.
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 Why not?
Sure.
We're not going to argue on that
one.
You know, a lot of shows now don't have overtures.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because they think audiences will just talk over them. To me, an overture or a good main title sequence.
Yeah.
Like a good main title sequence in a movie that, like by Saul Bass.
Yeah.
And with great music. It's like you had to segue from parking your car, ending whatever fight you were having with the person you're with, picking your either Twizzler or Red Vine. Where are you on this issue?
Neutral, because my wife and daughter are Red Vine Twizzler people. And
have a problem.
Yes.
You know those like there's like 15-pound things?
Yes, of course.
With it, yeah.
Okay, but where are you? Do you want a Twizzler or do you want a Red Vine?
Oh, man, I guess Red Vines, but
do you use it as a straw?
No, I'm an adult. As if I would use a Red Vine as I totally use Red Vine.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah,
I understand.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so there was so you've now got your Red Vine and or Twizzler, even though no place sells both, and you settle in your seat. You watched commercials that don't have anything to do with anything.
Yeah.
Then there's trailers, which are obviously the highlight of the entire thing. You forgot what movie you even went to go see. So that 3-minute main title, done well, like those early Tim Burton movies, by the end of Beetlejuice main title, you go, okay, I'm
da,
in the...
da, 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 da. Absolutely, yes. Absolutely.
And what was interesting, they previewed Beetlejuice. I was there. Without the score, nobody knew what the hell was going on. Because it was a... they couldn't temp track the movie well.
Yeah.
Is it comedy or is it horror? And the music found this sweet spot that explained to the audience, this is the world you're going to be in. Edward Scissorhands.
I was about to say, Edward Scissorhands is a brilliant opening.
Yep.
Because it's the same thing. It sounds like if you open up a music box.
Yep.
That's what it sounds
and
like.
And so you are so prepared for the movie by the time the main title's over. And the same with the Broadway show. It's like, oh, that overture's. A lot of shows could end after the overture, and I would prefer that.
Lest we forget. A lot of classic Broadway musicals had second act overtures.
Oh, yes. Which we in the industry called entr'actes. Did you know that?
I should have known that.
And all my Hollywood Bowl shows have intermissions because the musicians have to pee. And so I have specially written entr'actes for my shows because I love them so much. If I could... Basically, if every 10 minutes the movie could stop and there'd be another overture.
You'd be okay with it, yeah.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting way to put it, though, what you just said, which is it gets you into it.
Oh.
Whether it's seeing theater or seeing a movie, it gets you where you need to be. It's so true.
Now, there's a new weird accidental version of it, which is once you're done watching a DVD and you forget to stop, it plays the menu over
again,
and over and over.
And
that menu music becomes hypnotic. And you don't, like there's a movie Going in Style, the remake.
Sure.
This, I was in a barber shop and there was this endless loop of my own client's music. And by the time I got my hair done being cut, it's like, I did not think the world existed without that particular piece of music.
You were gonna watch a Western the other day and you had the menu and it was the same type of thing where I found when I left the room I was humming it.
Yeah.
And I went, what the hell am I humming?
They need to make the loops a little longer.
Yeah.
The repeat gets
I'll vote for that. So now you're a producer and entrepreneur.
Yes.
And to travel the world. I mean, that too, to do that with artists.
What's great is movies are universal.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Especially Universal movies are universal. And they're paramount to our entertainment. Can I extend this bad joke?
No. I'd let them go.
Yeah. I won't stop you.
Well, if there's some United Artists involved in it. they're never going to get to 20th Century Fox or
Warner. I was going
to
say that.
Yeah. And by the way, do you think that people think there were Warner Brothers? Or do you think they just think that's like a made-up name?
I've actually met people who don't know that Bros stands for brothers, so...
Oh, my God.
I've had that happen.
Could you upgrade your friends?
Never said friends.
Oh.
People.
People.
People I meet who are like, no, I just thought it was like Warner Bros. Like,
that's great.
Two names.
Hey, bro.
I'm like, great.
That's really
exactly
good.
It. I'm terrified, Richard. I'm terrified
of
the world.
And are there people who don't know there was a Walt Disney?
That's a big one.
Because his name is no longer on the movies. It's just Disney.
And the weirdest grammar.
Like saying Kleenex.
Yes, and he's gotten rid of even the apostrophe S.
Yes.
So it's really clumsy.
Yeah.
I thought his full name was Walt Disney Hotel and Resorts. Is that not his? Am I wrong? No?
No comment.
Okay.
No,
which then brings us, what a segue. My other... big passion.
Disney.
Oh, just incidentally, your other big...
Yeah.
Richard, what is your other big passion?
Well, now that you've forced it out of me, I believe I'm the world's largest collector of pieces of Disneyland. Not like regular souvenirs, like ride vehicles and props from the attractions. And over the years, I've accumulated, just to give you a taste of the kind of stuff, I own a ticket booth.
Own a Dumbo car.
Oh, I own a Dumbo. Like, I own a Dumbo, a Mr. Toad car, a People Mover, a Sky Bucket. I have the crummy attractions. Do you remember the Rocket Rods?
I like the Rocket Rods.
No one likes the Rocket Rods.
No, I did. You cannot take that away from me.
You're just a contrary.
No.
What? Do you need naps? Well, yeah, probably.
Listen.
Yeah.
Listen. I enjoyed it. It was very relaxing.
It was relaxing except for my inner turmoil of how much I was loathing the attraction.
What's important is you're not bitter. That's what's important.
Yes. Among my favorites, I own the sea serpent from the end of the submarine voyage.
Stop it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
That thing scared the crap out of me, even though it looked ridiculous.
Yes, yes. But sometimes ridiculous and scary are interchangeable.
Where do you put these things?
Well, over time...
You have children. Yes. Where do you put these things?
Well, I had to get a sense of priority. So
how'd that go for you?
My son pretty much ended up in the smallest room in the house.
Right.
And it was so overflowing because I also collected Gremlins and Mars Attacks toys.
Sure.
And I didn't have room for them, so they went in his bedroom when he was a small child.
You just made Aristotle, him very happy. Very happy.
So we would shove gizmos wherever we could.
Of course you would.
And the big piece.
But don't get them wet.
Oh, no. By the way, it's always after midnight. I mean, midnight comes and then it's after. They don't clarify any of this.
We can call Joe Dante right now.
Yes.
Joe Dante right now.
It's very disturbing. So unfortunately, the stuff I collect is humongous. The keel boats. Do you remember the keel boats?
Mm-hmm.
It's 40 feet long.
Oh, God.
And these are big items.
Yeah.
So they used to be littered. I own one of those canoes, you know, the one ride at Disneyland where you actually have to exert energy.
Right, yeah.
That thing's massive.
Yeah, it is.
And so it's currently all in storage.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I'm about to auction it all off and say goodbye. I'm getting rid of it. It's sort of like I was babysitting it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Are you keeping anything?
No, because once you decide, it becomes the end of the jerk.
Sure. Yeah.
I'll just take my Dumbo. No, and I just need this, and I just need my Haunted Mansion paintings. It's going away. The only thing I'm keeping is I have some original art by, like, Mary Blair.
Sure, well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
that needs to stay.
That needs to stay. And it's actual art.
Right.
So you can hang it on a wall.
So you can justify hanging it on a
wall. Yes. It's all about justification. Collectors, will you agree with this? We have some of the strangest coping mechanisms.
Well, I don't see that at all. No, no, no. Well, we'll have to have a deeper discussion.
First time I met Nikki, I think we just looked at each other and understood the pain of like growing up in a house that is like a museum.
Yes.
And we just understood and it was okay.
Yeah, there were times I liked my son as much as I liked some of the things I collected.
And then, hey, man.
You know? But I was never, like, here's the other thing about collectors. The thing they collect makes sense, and the stuff other people collect is stupid. Like, I think Disneyland pin collectors are dumb. It's like, oh, come on. Why would you possibly want a pin that anyone could just purchase at a store? As I'm leaning against my
ticket. Your 40-foot canoe.
Yeah, exactly.
I gotcha. No, and the thing is, you also made Finding Craftland.
Yes. When my son was 16, my birthday's March 1st, he's March 2nd, so we always have a joint birthday party, which are
epic birthday parties.
So for his 16th birthday, I decided to make the theme movie premiere, and I rented Paramount back lot.
This was the first time I met you.
Whoa.
That party was the first time I met you.
It was pretty good. But we needed a movie to premiere.
Right.
So it was like reverse engineered. We had the after party planned first. And then if you go to Disney World, in the hotel rooms, there's a thing, Disney's top, I think, 7 attractions hosted by this over-caffeinated, perky girl named Stacy. And we had a group of like 20 of us staying at Disney World for a week. And we'd have breakfast every morning and argue about Stacy.
Love it.
We would alternate. It was like, oh, my God, she's the greatest woman of all time. And the next day, it's like, she's driving me insane. She's so perky. So I decided I'm going to make a movie about my collections and my relationship with Nikki. And I'm going to find Stacy.
Oh, good.
And I track Stacy down. And I had to send her a bunch of stuff to prove I wasn't insane.
Right.
Because she could have ended up chopped into little pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
Because there's a fine line between enthusiasm and dementia.
And bonkers.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So out comes Stacy, and we made the movie. And then it was to be screened one time only at the birthday party. And someone said, oh, this is a really good movie. You should submit it to a film festival. And it's like, it's a home movie about my son and my stupid collections. They go, you should try. So I put into the Santa Barbara Film Festival, which is a good one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they accepted it. It was like, I went to the first night and I faced the audience. I go, who are you? You got a catalog listing
what
everything.
Are you doing?
And you picked this one? I didn't think I've slept with most of you. Why are you here? And then the movie's reaching its last 15 minutes and the fire alarm goes off in the theater and no one leaves. And Mickey goes, they'd rather burn to death than miss the exciting climax of this film. So anyway, yeah.
I mean, clearly it's true.
Clearly.
Because they're all dead now.
Yeah.
So,
going back to our theme.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of morbidly me killing people.
Sure.
Have you ever been or participated in any of these Hollywood collector shows at the Burbank?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
A long time ago.
Uh-huh.
When Ray Quartz was still running them.
And it is, for those of us who don't know what I'm talking about, how would you describe it?
Oh, Lord. Well, as a kid. Hang on.
I'm now pantomiming to my daughter.
Yes.
I'm pantomiming to my daughter. Be kind.
I wasn't even going to be
Rewind.
Bad about it. I wasn't even going to be bad about it. No, what I was going to say, as a kid walking in, it didn't register with me because I didn't know who most of the people were.
Right.
What I knew was that both my parents were plotzing. Because for my mom, it was who? There was somebody.
Troy Donahue.
Troy
oh,
Donahue,
that's plotzable.
And Alice lost it.
And who'd you
she
lose
lost
it for?
She punched me in the arm and was just, oh, God, it's Troy Donahue, you know?
You don't know how many times I hear that a day.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
And, well, seeing the Creature from the Black Lagoon was pretty awesome.
Yeah, Ben Chapman.
Was he the guy in the suit?
Well, there's the dry creature and the wet creature.
No.
Yes.
What I want is for them to sit next to each other with separate shots from the movie, being like, see, this is wet. This is me.
Yeah.
I'm the wet creature.
The wet creature.
But what's so funny is that Riku Browning, who was the underwater gill man,
yes,
is still, I believe he's still alive, unless it's his
still
son.
Still swimming.
Well, no. When
Keep
you see
swimming.
Films shot in Florida
he's
or
the
thereabouts and there's underwater stuff, I'm a credit reader. I stay and read credits.
Clearly.
Riku Browning is not a name that it's easy to forget.
What is that first name?
R-I-C-O-U.
You see, I'm reading Famous Monster Filmland magazine.
Of course.
Which see that name, and there's certain names, as soon as I see them, I know there's no way I'm going to decode how to say them.
Right.
Like the butler in Richie Rich. Mm-hmm. Was Cadbury. But as a child, it was so daunting. He was just Mr. C.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Yeah.
Hey, it works.
And look, Happy Days stole the idea. So these collector shows, everyone wanted the famous people.
Yeah.
I want the original voice of Snow White.
Adriana Casalotti.
She sang to me.
Ugh.
And then died 2 weeks later. The original voice of Br'er Bear or Br'er Rabbit.
Oh, yes. Nicodemus. Nick Stewart.
Killed that guy.
I'm going to ask you to not speak to anyone we know.
It's usually,
that would
it's
be
usually
great.
When I get their autograph.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's like they've signed their death certificate.
Oh, good. Well, you know, we call him Dr. Death because he's the king of obituaries.
Oh, my God. I know.
So,
wait.
You know.
You're the only obituary I want to read. It's like, Jerry Lewis, quick.
Honestly, it is so different. We do all the time. Death is our business and business is good.
Yeah.
How is it rare that a famous Hollywood person dies and you hadn't met them or interviewed them?
Yes. The shorter answer as he's thinking is yes.
I've been very lucky. I've been very like you.
Right.
I've met so many of my pop culture heroes.
Right. Who did you not meet?
Well,
Walt
I didn't meet did meet Walt Disney.
Yeah, but you were too the
I was
age,
too,
wasn't
too young and I was
but
on the other
was,
coast.
Who was it conceivable and it's almost shocking you never met that person?
Good question. I don't know.
Good question.
Yeah.
Good question.
I don't have a ready answer for you.
Well, you can submit it later.
I don't have a ready
later.
Answer
no,
for
his
you.
Normal
well,
answer
I never
to
met
me.
Joan Fontaine, who
neither have I
recently.
We have a lot in common.
This is better.
I met her sister, Olivia de Havilland.
Yes. And they did not like each other.
No,
correct?
They did not.
No, they did. No, they did not.
Yeah. I like people that are more famous for their feud than
oh,
their 100%, career.
Oh, 100%. Yes. Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I got to meet Fred Astaire once. That was an unforgettable moment.
At what point of his life was that?
Toward the end. Toward the
you
end.
You know,
but
it's the only celebrity, there's two celebrities who I have been tongue-tied around.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was Gene Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, there's no way I'm talking to Gene Kelly. Mm-hmm. That is just, he's a level of God that
right.
is not.
Right.
And then the other one, which should have been the easiest in a way, Ray Harryhausen.
Ah. Mm.
There was nothing intimidating about him as a person.
No.
Not every person in the world knows who Ray Harryhausen is. I wrote my seventh grade term paper about Ray Harryhausen.
Of course you did.
And there he was. And I was just like, I refuse to go up to him and tell him how much I like the skeleton fight. What else do I have to say?
I understand.
Yeah. How about you? Who have you been tongue-tied around?
Oh, well, as a kid, Donald O'Connor.
Oh.
That was the end-all, be-all. That was it for me. And then I have accosted and terrified Russ Tamblyn, which our audience has heard me talk about this, because he's my first crush. Because Seven Brides is my favorite movie. He was my first crush.
But you had six other... not brides, husbands you could have picked.
I did. Well, I think, I mean, for anybody, Howard Keel is like, you know, the man walks on water.
Nikki, my son, saw Donald O'Connor at the premiere of some movie he was in towards the end of his life, and we had just seen Singing in the Rain, and my son was freaking out. He goes, that's the guy who ran up the wall.
Yep.
And we were... at the premiere the next day of Batman and Robin or whatever the nipple one is.
Yep.
And,
and great.
I said, oh, look, there's like whoever, who's starring in that movie? Was it George Clooney?
It's George Clooney and Chris O'Donnell. And Alicia Silverstone.
You know too much.
I've seen that movie a lot.
Well.
I'm sorry.
I said to my son, don't you want to meet them? And he goes, they don't do anything. That's all special effects. That other guy ran up a wall.
Yeah.
That's because you raised us right.
Yes.
That's because, you know who I was tongue-tied? I never thought I would be, but when we met Bernadette Peters, and I didn't think that I would be so terrified, but it was...
And she couldn't have been nicer.
No, she was lovely.
And she's tiny, isn't she?
Well, they're all tiny.
Is that true? All movie stars are small and have large heads?
Pretty much.
Yeah. I think
they're bobbleheads.
Not universally,
but as a rule of thumb.
And as my mom likes to point out, all old Jews eventually look like rabbis.
Yes.
So seeing someone like Steven Spielberg, she goes, tell me that's not a rabbi.
Yes, you're
right. Tell me he doesn't look like a rabbi.
They pull out the Talmud towards the end of their career.
Honestly, looks like a
rabbi. But back to the big head theory.
Yes.
Do you back me up on this?
I think so.
It made him photogenic and larger than life.
The camera
likes it.
Likes it.
Yep. Yeah.
Camera finds that appealing.
So when you hear movie stars have large heads, it's not their ego. It's their actual cranium.
Quentin Tarantino's head is the biggest I've ever seen in my
life. Oh my God, it's two heads in one.
Like it's actually overwhelming.
It's like Jay Leno
the size of his head.
Is petite.
Right?
Head-wise. Okay, my Tarantino story is, so I finally meet Quentin Tarantino. And I know what I have in common with them is we're both soundtrack collectors.
Mm-hmm.
So I start doing, do you have?
And
he would, like, I named some obscure Jackie Chan Japanese release thing. And he'd throw back in my face some Morricone thing from a caveman comedy. And we'd go back and forth. And then I mention, I go, well, I have the rarest soundtrack of all, which is the soundtrack to Caine Mutiny. Do you know this?
No.
The rarest soundtrack of all time is Max Steiner's Caine Mutiny, Humphrey Bogart movie. It was released and withdrawn, and there are only five existing copies, of which I have one. So among soundtracks—
Why was it withdrawn?
Because it contained dialogue from the movie, and they had not cleared the rights from the playwright.
Okay, okay.
So— I now am going to pull out my big guns and slap down Quentin Tarantino with, well, I have Caine Mutiny. So I go, so I've got Caine Mutiny. He goes, I don't care about that. I was like, okay. My other weird, be careful who you spar with.
You're right.
Is I met Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to hire a mutual friend of ours. Tony Baxter.
Yes.
Tony said the great Imagineer.
Great Imagineer.
All of our favorite attractions, Indiana Jones, Splash Mountain, Big Thunder Mountain, Tony Baxter.
And Disney Paris is all him.
Yes, he is amazing. And Michael Jackson decided to hire him to do something, but no one knew what. So Tony said to me, could you come with me to my next meeting? Because I can't make heads or tails out of what he's actually asking me to do.
Oh, wow.
So I go to this meeting at the Sheraton Universal. We have an entire floor, three chairs, Tony Baxter, myself, and Michael Jackson. And I'm trying to make small talk. And I'm going, oh, I collect Disneyland stuff. And he's like, oh. I go, I have a Dumbo. And he looked at me like, I'm Michael Jackson. Do you think I am ever going to be impressed by your Dumbo? But then I said, what was your first memory of Disneyland? And Michael said, oh, I worked there when I was five. And it kind of broke my heart. No one's first trip to Disneyland
should be working.
Should be like putting in hours.
Yeah.
And I kept saying things like, so do you want Tony to start a company like Imagineering? And Michael would go, oh, that's such a good idea. And then I go, do you want him to like build hotels? Oh, I like the way you think. And this just was like, I could have said, do you want a cottage cheese on peach?
And that would be so good.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the meeting's over and Michael Jackson's handler goes, oh, who did speak exactly like Br'er Rabbit? No, Br'er Fox. So it was really weird. It's like, is he pulling my leg? It's sort of like Amos and Andy kind of guy. Oh, Michael really liked you. And it's like, so they said I should submit a proposal. Mm-hmm. So I said to Tony, how much would you have to get paid to never work again the rest of your life? Because this is never going anywhere. So I made some insane proposal. And every 6 months I'd check in and they'd go, oh, he's about to look at it. Oh, it's on the top of the stack. And then he died.
And then he died. Yes, yeah, saw that one coming. Yeah.
I see.
Saw that one coming.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's no actual signature or autograph in this story.
Okay.
That would have made it a little better.
We won't blame that one on you.
Yeah. So when did you move to California?
In
84.
83.
Had you been to Disneyland before then?
Yeah. On my first trip. But I didn't get to go to Disneyland until I was 17 or 18. And made my first trip to L.A.
So you have no actual childhood memories?
None. Well, I was jealous of my best friend who went when we were 8 or 9. And he did bring me back a cell from the art corner.
Of cell from which production?
First, he brought back a Chippendale cell, a multi-layer Chippendale cell, which had the gold sticker on the back.
Yes, of course.
It was authentic, and it was from the Walt Disney Art Corner, Disneyland. And then the next year, his family made a road trip back to California, and he brought me a Ludwig von Drake cell.
Who is this?
Barry Arendt.
Or who's Ludwig von Drake?
If you're listening, thanks, Barry.
I have no idea who that is.
Wait, do you know who Ludwig von Drake is?
Oh, yes, obviously.
That's so obvious.
Yeah. Oh, well, no, I'll tell you why, actually, because my friend—
I never met Paul Frees. I wish I'd met Paul
Frees. Do you know who Paul Frees is?
Yes.
Paul Frees was Boris Batanoff, the voice of the ghost host in the Haunted Mansion. Right.
Ghost host.
And pretty much anything that's supposed to sound
like Ludwig von Drake.
Yes.
And any voice in a movie that's supposed to sound like Orson Welles and isn't. Oh, and most importantly, he was Adventures Through Inner Space. Mm-hmm. You're getting smaller and smaller.
Yes. And works a lot with Stan Freberg, too.
Yes, who I'm sure you knew well and wrote a good obit on. And you just had June Foray.
Yep.
Yeah. That one hurt.
That one. Could she reach a point of age where she wouldn't die?
Well, that's what I was figuring. And she was still feisty as ever. And so, yeah, so that was a bit of a surprise.
Who just died yesterday who was 91? Do we remember?
Was it Jerry?
No, there's more. Here's the one I hate. They die in 3.
Always.
What? Where do you start? It's like the Gremlins After Midnight.
I don't know.
There's always going to be people dying.
There's always going to be people dying.
Look, if it was 3 extremely famous people die within 24 hours. That would be a rule.
Yeah. But people are dying who have never died before.
Yes, they're trailblazers.
Yeah.
I've managed to combine almost everything I've ever adored into some crazy. For example, I love the artist Shag. Do you know Shag?
Yes. Not personally, but I know.
But you know his art. And so he was one of the last. I love this guy's stuff, and it has nothing to do with my life. I can just enjoy it and collect it, except for now I'm working on a project with him.
Of course you are. Of course you are.
Now, the late, great Ray Bradbury often said, it was almost a motto, that he never worked a day in his life because he loved what he did so much, it wasn't work.
Yep, absolutely.
And that sounds like you.
Oh, put it this way. The one thing you never want to put me in charge of is trying to make money. Mm-hmm. I am the worst businessman when I try to act like a businessman. Mm-hmm. I've made 2 or 3 business decisions in my life. Like, look, I don't really like this guy and I don't like his music, but he makes a lot of money. This is good. A grown-up would hire this person. It's like, it's always a disaster. Mm. And like, I don't even know how to read a ledger. I say to my accountant guy, am I broke yet? And he's like, almost. And it's like, okay, I can keep spending. The making of money is inherently uninteresting. I didn't mind, even my earliest jobs, my first job was giving out free samples of beef stick at Hickory Farms. Mm-hmm. Loved that job. Loved it. My ability to make people buy beef stick they didn't know they wanted. And back in the day, it came in a 3-pound log of sausage.
Delicious.
And they'd say, I want a pound. I knew exactly where to cut it to make it a pound. I moved the knife over slightly, and I would wait. I go, oh, it's a pound and a quarter. No human has ever said, cut off that quarter pound, I only want. Now, it's not the same as the finger on the scale. I wasn't cheating them.
Right.
I was just giving them the extra beef stick they actually wanted, but
they just didn't know that they wanted the extra beef
yes.
stick.
Exactly. And then my second job was a candy counter at a local movie theater. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know the word upsell, but I loved it. They'd go, I'll have a Coke, and I'd grab the large cup, and I go, large? And as you're picking up the large cup, no one's going to intercept you and go, no, I want medium. And I'd insult the small size. Like if people go, what sizes do you have? I'd be, we have large, medium, and baby. No grown man gets the baby one. And so I learned many things working at the movie theater. Superman was playing. It was, and I would stand under the screen and watch the audience, knowing when they were about to laugh or when they were about to cheer. And I'd go, they don't know it yet, but they're about to be really happy.
Wow.
And then the thing would happen. And then I learned a joke that follows another joke gets a bigger laugh, even if it's not a better joke. Sort of like the pump has been primed.
Yeah.
And most importantly, a lot of people think of Superman for the great John Williams score, Christopher Reeve. I lost my virginity during the movie.
Of course you did.
Yeah, I was the assistant manager in the office during the helicopter rescue sequence, so I could hear the music pouring in. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It all makes sense, doesn't it?
Yep.
All makes sense.
Everything circles back to film music.
Now, before we wrap up, I do want to give Nikki a plug because he's made a successful app, a very successful app.
Yes, so my son is
Nicholas Aaron Kraft.
Yes, Nicholas Aaron Kraft.
Known as Nicky.
Who chose to intentionally not do any of the things I do.
Yeah.
Smart guy. But he knew how to be enthusiastic. And he was a beta tester on a phone app called List, which was put together by BJ Novak. And my son was a beta tester who kept sending emails with suggestions of how to improve it or feedback. And finally, BJ was like, let's have lunch. He goes, you love this thing. Why don't you come work here? Mm. And he's been there 2 years, and I'm really proud because it has – talk about the ultimate millennial job. I work at a phone app company run by an actor who's famous for talking about phone apps on the show The Office. It's so meta.
Meta.
And so, yeah, he's good. And I consider Nikki – Richard 2.0. It's like they got rid of the bugs. I see similarities here. All the adorable Leonard Maltin qualities, but with a twist.
With enough Alice in there.
Yeah.
To make me feisty. That's what it is. That's what it is. But the thing is, Nikki has always been lovely. He has your charisma, and he's driven.
But what also helps is he only spent a third of the year in Hollywood.
Yes.
And 2/3 of the year in a log home in rural Oregon.
With his mom, yeah.
Yeah, and with his mom. And what was interesting is, like, we'd go to a movie premiere of Men in Black, and there was Will Smith. I go, Nikki, might I go have your picture taken with Will Smith? He goes, no. I go, well, you could show it to your friends. And he said, they'll just think I digitally inserted him. And Nikki and I visited the set of Tim Burton's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And I went up to Oregon, and he was taking a film class at the local high school. And I said to the teacher, oh, did Nikki mention how much fun he had on a set of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory? And Nikki gave me the look of, shut up, do not mention this. Mm. And I realized he knew how to play. He knew his audience.
Mm.
And he knew how to not be that annoying Hollywood. I've never learned how not to be the annoying Hollywood guy. Nikki's mastered it.
Well, so List app, everybody should check out List app. I think it's a top download.
Yeah, what it is it's Twitter in list form.
Yeah.
So we all like making lists. You're a list maker, aren't you?
Yep.
At times.
You're more of a presenter of information.
I'll take that. Thanks.
Yes, I mean, I just moved to a new house. And my old house had no bookshelves. I went for this minimalist clean line thing, and I put all my books in storage. Now I have a new house lined with bookshelves, physically touching your movie guides and putting them up on the shelf. And you have many things. You have, how many volumes was it?
Of that book?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know. I lost 30 some.
And what's so great? They're so thick.
Huge.
You have it's the Bible in you.
I just always say doorstop.
Also useful as a doorstop. Yeah.
Useful doorstop.
I mean, just, I'm surprised the printers didn't just get mad at you.
They did.
Year. Okay.
They did.
They said they couldn't bind it thicker without hand collating the pages. Yep. So that had to.
That's why he had to start taking stuff out. He had to start taking stuff out of the book.
Now, you know what always got me about your books? And I both loved you and hated you for what I'm about to say. You wouldn't list movies that weren't going to be on TV. So you didn't list a lot of Disney movies.
At one time.
You were a purist. And yes. I like that about you. But the movies changed. I cared about as a child, yes. I'd be, oh, good, I can look up Mary Poppins, except for it's not here.
That's right.
And then it changed.
Then it all changed.
Yes.
With the coming of video. And we changed with that time.
Yes. But I thought you had amnesia initially. Until I read the preface, I was like, I'm reading Mom, Pa, Kettle. There's 87 of them, and there's no Mary Poppins. And what was sad is you knew every Mom, Pa, Kettle movie.
Oh, yeah.
Were any of them any good?
Hey, I like Mom, Pa, Kettle. Oh, you stepped right on off.
Did I
we
really?
We enjoy Mom, Pa, Kettle.
Is Egg and I the quintessential, or are they too small of a part?
They're comedy relief in the Egg and I.
So if anyone listening to this goes, boy, of everything I got out of those conversations, I want to watch a Mom, Pa, Kettle movie.
Mom, Pa, Kettle at Home, I think it's called.
Is the
one with Alan Mowbray in it.
This considered the Citizen Kane of Mom, Pa, Kettle movies?
I mean,
it's the Mom, Pa, Kettle of Mom, Pa, Kettle movies.
Oh, yeah.
I've not fallen into that trap.
Yes.
We need one gem. We need one gem to wrap it up.
We always ask our guests for a hidden gem.
Okay.
A movie you like that you think is underrated or perhaps underappreciated.
The number one movie that nobody knew in the past, but now people know it, but when I find people who don't know it and I make them watch it, they're madly in love with me, is 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T.
Good choice. Yeah. Excellent choice.
Yes, the only live-action movie written by Dr. Seuss.
Right.
Wrote original songs. It's about a mad music teacher who kidnaps 500 little boys to play on his giant piano.
And the set design is incredible.
Looks like a Dr. Seuss drawing.
Yeah, Eugene Laurier, I think, was the name of the production designer.
God, I feel like I'm with Leonard Maltin right now.
But wait a minute. But I love the 3-CD soundtrack.
Oh, my God. I thought they just made it for me.
No, me too.
Just for you and Tarantino.
All the song demos. They cut so many good songs from the movie.
Yes.
They have all the demo recordings, all the cut music, the finished recording sessions.
I know the people who put it out. I think they sold 2 copies, and I think I know who bought them.
Right.
One of them was me.
Yeah. And I'm the other. The other one sort of fits next to it for some reason is 7 Faces of Dr. Lau.
Ah, the George Pal.
He's like numbers.
Yeah. Yes.
He just into numbers is all
and,
it is.
And doctors.
And doctors. That's true.
Yes.
Numbers and doctors.
And fingers and faces.
There you go.
Ooh.
It all comes together.
Yes.
It all comes together.
Is there a movie that you thought you made up? Like it was some distant memory and then no one knew what you were talking about and then you got redemption later.
Oh, as I'm getting older, let's not go there.
Because for me, Monster Party.
Oh.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Which absolutely exists.
Yeah. It does exist. It's made by the people who
Rankin and Bass.
Yes. Who made Frosty the Snowman and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And it has Boris Karloff as the voice of Dracula and Phyllis Diller as the Bride of Frankenstein. And it's very Nightmare Before Christmas before Nightmare Before Christmas.
There's a movie that I'm obsessed with that I love that I used to watch constantly and I have no idea what happened to it. It's called Mother Goose Rock and Rhyme. We got, this is ridiculous, Cyndi Lauper, Bobby Brown, Shelley Duvall, Art Garfunkel, Terry Garr, Woody Harrelson, Debbie Harry, David Leisure, Little Richard. Howie Mandel, Cheech Marin, Katie Sagal, Gary Shandling, Paul Simon, Gene Stapleton, Brian Setzer, and it goes on.
How
and
does this
on.
Exist and nobody knows it? This
I,
is the
I don't know.
This
I don't
is
know.
The greatest cast
it,
of all time.
ZZ Top is in it. Pia Zadora is in it. Like, and so I watched this religiously as a kid, and I've asked people before, and they just don't know it existed, which just seems crazy.
Well, it has to be found,
right?
Maybe one of your listeners.
Yeah.
You see, you put it out in the world,
and Mother Goose
will come back.
It'll bounce
back. It'll bounce back.
Yeah.
Richard, it's such fun talking to you.
This was fun. I made no sense.
Thank you for coming
but...
by. No, if people made sense of you in the first 2 minutes, I'm sure they stayed.
Yes, and the rest were like, I don't know who this guy is. Let's get the hell out of here.
That's right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for being here. Are you a social media person?
He is.
Yes.
How can people find you?
Oh, I'm not. I'm just a Facebook guy.
Oh, okay. Just
I don't
asking.
Have my own stuff.
Just asking.
That was sweet.
And you just.
I like that. That was such a cool thing to say.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And where do people follow you? Well, people find us on Twitter, at Leonard Maltin, at Jesse Maltin. Instagram, at Leonard Maltin, at Jesse Maltin. And www.leonardmaltin.com.
That's where I do my writing.
Yeah,
you
I
know,
just
for reading purposes.
Driving around my house and staring at me. It's a different kind of social media.
It's different, you know,
I have
similar.
Different types of followers.
You're a unique man with unique fans.
Yes.
That's what it is.
It's been a blast.
Thank
Thanks
you
so, much,
so much,
Richard. And we will see you folks next time.
Bye-bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.